Yes, okay.
Right.
How are you? Let's go. Haftor of Parshas Kasset Chayesara.
So it's Parshas Chayesara. The Haftor this week comes to the beginning, the first portion of the Sefer Molochim Aleph. Right in the beginning starts Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. And the Sefer Molochim picks up with by the end of David HaMelech's life. The majority of David HaMelech's life is spoken about in Sefer Shmuel. And Sefer Molochim picks up at the end of David HaMelech's life. And let's look on the source sheet at Ois Aleph number 1. The Sefer begins, V'HaMelech David Zokein Bo Ba'yomim V'Yichasuhu Ba'Begodim V'Lo Yichamloi. And the king David Zokein, he was aging, Bo Ba'yomim, he had reached an advanced age, V'Yichasuhu Ba'Begodim, they covered him with clothing, V'Lo Yichamloi, it would not warm him up. As far as the language of the Pasuk, seems the two words are used to express David's aging. It says, Zokein bo ba'yomim. So the Mefarshim explain that there's actually two different ideas. Zokein means that he looked old. He had the indications of someone who's aging. Physical manifestations of aging. However, occasionally, someone has the signs of aging, even when they're not so old. So the pasuk continues, Bo Ba'yom, he actually was an advanced age. He actually was old. He was Zokein, he looked old. He actually was aging. And Bo Ba'yomim, right, it's not that he was young and he still displayed signs of old age. Rather, he was actually at an advanced age. And what happened? V'yichasuhu ba'begodim v'lo yichamloi. They covered him with clothing, and they couldn't warm him up. David HaMelech, in his old age, he was very cold. They tried to warm him up. They tried to cover him with blankets, with clothing, sweaters, scarves. But nothing helped. David could not be warmed up. And then David's going to go on to say that David's advisors told him that the solution is to find a young maiden girl that David should be in her presence, and that'll help warm him up. I don't want to get into that part of it. There are those who suggest that that's actually the connection between the parasha this week and the Haftarah. The same way in the parasha, Avraham sent Eliezer to go find a wife for Yitzchak. So too, in the beginning of the Haftarah, the messengers were sent out to try to find a fitting maiden, young girl, to provide warmth for David HaMelech. So we're getting back to this first pasuk. The Navi tells us that v'yichasuhu ba'begodim v'lo yichamloi. They covered him with clothes and they couldn't warm him up. So what was this all about? Why was it that David seems to have this unnatural condition that he was so cold that no matter what they did, how many blankets and how many sweaters they put on him, they couldn't warm him up. So let's take a look at number 2, Ois Beis. The Gemara Maseches Brachos addresses this question. The Gemara starts by quoting a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel that we'll get back to in a moment. It says, "Vayokom David, vayichro." He says, "Knaf hamiila shel shol balot." David got up and he cut off the edge of the garment of Shaul. He did it balot. He did it quietly. So the Gemara says, "Omer Rabbi Yosi." Reb Chanina says, "Kol mevaze es habegodin. Anyone who disgraces, who degrades clothing, soif einoy nehene mehem. At the end, he will not be able to benefit from them. He'll not be able to benefit from what from the benefits that clothing usually provide for a person. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, the Gemara quotes our pasuk, the Hamelech David Zokein bo ba'yomim. King David had grown old; he had reached an advanced age." They covered him with clothing and it didn't warm him up. So Gemara says that because of that action that David had done much earlier in his life, he had cut off the corner of Shaul's garment, that was considered mevazeh es habegodim, that he degraded, disgraced the clothing. Because of that, the result was that soif einoy, he wasn't able to benefit from them. He wasn't able to benefit when he got older from the warmth that clothing usually provide. So let's just get a little bit of a context. What was this story in Shmuel when David HaMelech cut off the edge of Shaul's clothing? We know that earlier in David's life, that towards the end of Shaul's kingdom, before David's kingdom really got started, Shaul spent a long time chasing David around. David was running away from Shaul. Shaul thought that David was after him and trying to knock him off and take over the kingdom. Indeed, David had no such interest. But Shaul was concerned about that, and therefore Shaul was chasing after David, trying to catch him, trying to get him. He wanted to kill David. Shaul considered David to be a Mayrid b'malchus, someone who rebels against the king. And the halacha is that a Mayrid b'malchus, someone who rebels against the king, is chayiv misa. The king is able to put him to death. Now, it happens to be that Shaul was wrong. David wasn't a Mayrid b'malchus. But in Shaul's mind, he thought that David was after him, and he considered him to be a Mayrid b'malchus. So one of the incidents that took place during these years of Shaul chasing David, Pasuk says, if you look at number 3, I skim on the source sheet, Vayikach Shaul Shloishes Alofim Ish Bochur Mikol Yisrael. Shaul took 3,000 men, the choicest amongst the Jewish people. Vayelech Levakish as David, and he went to seek out David, Vanoshov and his men. David had people who were on his side, who were traveling along with him, running away from Shaul. Alpinei Tzurei HaYe'elim, a certain location, which was by the racks of the wild goats. Vayovi al Gidrei Hatzoin al Haderech. So they came to the places where they had the pens for the sheep. Al Haderech, which was by the road. Visham the Oral. So they come to a place and there's a cave there. Vayovi Shaul Hoseich Hizraglov. Shaul went into the cave to relieve himself. David and his people, they, unbeknownst to Shaul, David and his people were in the back of the cave. Apparently the cave had two rooms, two areas. David and his men had been hiding out in the back of the cave. And what do you know, Shaul walks into that same cave, to the front part of the cave, to relieve himself. So very quietly, David, the people who were with David, his friends, his advisors, they said to him, "Hinei hayoy ma she'omar Hashem elecha. Behold, today is the day that Hashem has said to you, Hinei onoichi noisei nesoivcha biyodecha. Hashem promised David, I'm going to give over your enemies in your hands. Now's the time, here's the opportunity. Ve'osiso loika asheitav be'inecha. Do the show, here's the opportunity. He has no clue that you're there. He's not ready, he's not prepared. Here's your chance to take care of him once and for all." Vayokam David, David got up, he did not follow the advice of his men. Rather, Vayichro, he says, Kanaf ha'mi'il asher l'shol balot. He cut off the corner, the edge of the garment of Shaul balot. Quietly, very quietly, he was able to, as Shaul was sitting there, David was able to cut off a corner of his garment without Shaul realizing it. The pasuk says, "Vahi achrichein vayachlev David oisai." After he did that, David's heart was bothering him. David had remorse. Al shakona says, "Akonav asher l'shol," because he had cut off the corner of the garment of Shaul. So David is running away from Shaul. Shaul really wants to kill David. This is no joke. He's really going to kill him if he catches him, and it just works out that David ends up hiding with his men in the back of the cave, that Shaul comes in to the front of it to relieve himself. David's men advise him to kill Shaul. This is your opportunity. Instead, David cuts off the corner of the garment, and David feels bad about it. I'm sorry, I forgot to put this one more pasuk, a few psukim later. One more pasuk, it was later on, after Shaul left, and he went on looking for David. Then, when he was far enough away, David came out, and he called out to Shaul, and he said, amongst the things that he said, the pasuk later on says, "The Avi," he refers to Shaul, "my father, Re'ei gam re'ei is kenaf me'ilcha b'yadi." See, he picks up the piece of garment that he had cut off, he says, "Re'ei gam re'ei, take a look over here. Kenaf me'ilcha b'yadi, the corner of your garment is in my hand. Ki b'charsi is kenaf me'ilcha, v'loi haragticha. When I cut off the corner of your garment, I didn't kill you. You see, how did I get the piece of your garment? It's because I was right next to you. So you see, I cut off the corner of your garment, I didn't kill you. Da'ure'ei, you should know and see, it's clear. Ki ein biyodi rov ofesha v'lichotosi loch. I have nothing against you, I didn't sin against you, I don't plan on sinning against you. Rather, you're the one after me trying to kill me without any justification. So this event that the Gemara is telling us is the reason why David had to suffer with this condition of constantly being cold at the end of his life. This event was that David's being chased by Shaul. David has the opportunity to kill Shaul. Instead, he cuts off the corner of his garment, and he uses that piece of garment to try to make peace with Shaul, to show to him, to prove to him that he's really not trying to kill him. So the question is, then is, so how are we to understand this Gemara? Gemara tells us David was mevazeh b'begadim, and therefore he had to suffer at the end of his life. Why? Why did he have to suffer? What was the problem? By Rabbi Aaron Kotler, the Chatzalik Lebroch, and the Mishnah Sebarim on Nach, he says, it seems illogical, it seems unfair. First of all, David could have killed Shaul. If David would have killed Shaul, he would have been completely justified. Shaul was a roideif. Shaul was chasing after David trying to kill him unjustly. Shaul thought it was justly, but it was not. And so Shaul, it was a roideif. He was pursuing David trying to kill him. David had the right to turn around and kill Shaul, and he didn't do that. Instead, he only cut off the corner of his garment. And not only that, David felt bad about it. And David was trying to do it not just to get Shaul. It's not as if he was trying to hurt Shaul or damage him by cutting his clothing. We see clearly in the Pesukim, David's intention was to make peace with Shaul, to be able to prove to him that he wasn't after him, he wasn't trying to kill him. So why, as a result of that, was David seemingly punished by having to suffer that the clothing would not warm him up at the end of his life? And Rabbi Aaron says that indeed this is not a punishment. It wasn't a punishment. Rather, Rabbi Aaron explains that the Gemara is telling us that the way Hashem created the world is that the nature of the world is that when we respect things that we have, then we're able to benefit from them. We have many different things that we have, clothing, houses, all sorts of different possessions that we have. There are other people's things as well. If we respect them, if we show them the proper respect, if we treat them properly, then we can benefit from them. But the nature of the world is such that if we don't respect things, if we disrespect them, if we belittle them, degrade them, then we cannot benefit from them. It's part of its nature, it's a cause and effect. It's not that David sinned, that what David did was wrong. It's an issue, it's cause and effect. If you treat things properly, you can benefit from them. David was considered, it was considered that he did not treat the garment of Shaul properly, and since he didn't treat it properly, therefore he was not able to benefit from it. Cause and effect. He belittled the garment. David HaMelech did not have the ability to benefit from the garment, benefit from the warmth that garments usually produce. And if Desta goes on to explain this a drop further, Rav Dessler explains that everything that we have, everything that we're fortunate to have in our lives, everything in the world, has one purpose. And that purpose is to help us recognize Hashem and serve Hashem. Everything that we have, whatever we have, whether it's our car, our house, our clothing, whatever we have, it's what Hashem gave us in order to be able to serve Him, to be able to recognize Him and to be able to serve Him. That's what we have. In other words, everything we have is a tool to be able to serve Hashem. Now, those tools are very tolerant. They're tolerant of the way that we use them. If a person uses the tools that Hashem gives him in an improper way, so as long as there's some sort of hope that through using them in an improper way, a person will come to at the end of the day use them in a proper way, then those tools are tolerant, they're willing to wait out and see that the time will come later on when they'll be used in the proper way. The example that Rav Dessler gives is that when it comes to a Torah, he says, we know the rule is that a person should be Isaac b'Torah mitzvah shaloi l'shma, shemei Torah shaloi l'shma b'olishma. A person should be involved in learning Torah and doing mitzvahs shaloi l'shma, even if he doesn't have the proper intentions, even if he's doing it to become famous, to become wealthy, for whatever reason. But a person should still do it. Why? That that as a result of doing it with the wrong intention, not for the proper reasons, Baal Lishma, he'll eventually come through that, he'll get used to it, and eventually he'll develop the proper feelings and the proper intentions, and he'll come to do it Lishma for the right, proper reasons. So Rav Dessler says, if that's the case, so despite the fact that really a person's using the Torah in an improper way, he's using it to make himself famous, to make money, which is improper, but the Torah is tolerant, and the Torah is willing to wait and be patient until the time comes, since it sees the potential, the time to come when a person will use it properly to serve Hashem, the Torah is willing to wait. However, says Rav Dessler, that if a person is disrespectful, if a person degrades the tools that Hashem gives him, that much tolerance they don't have. That they won't tolerate. They won't tolerate that. If a person degrades that which Hashem gives him, then those tools will in turn not give back to the person what they're meant to give him. Again, that's an example of the Torah. If a person degrades the Torah, person has opportunities to learn Torah, and he says, nah, I'm not interested. I don't want to learn the Torah. That's disrespectful. That's degrading the Torah. So then, says Rav Dessler, then the Torah will not cooperate, and the Torah will not give the person the opportunity to use it, to advance in his avodas Hashem. So Rav Dessler explains, it's that everything that we have is a tool that Hashem gave us in order to be able to serve Him. And as much as we use it for that purpose, and we respect it, we understand what its purpose is, then it'll cooperate with us, and it'll do what it's supposed to do to help us serve Hashem. However, if we disgrace it, if we don't treat it properly, if we degrade those tools that Hashem gave us, then they will not cooperate with us, then they will not give us the assistance that they're supposed to give us in coming to serve Hashem. I would add that depending on how directly a certain tool brings us to serve Hashem, that's how sensitive that tool is. The Torah will be very sensitive. The Torah is a very direct connection between a person and Hashem. The Torah is something that a person, through the Torah, the person directly serve Hashem through the learning of the Torah. Other things are not so directly connected to serving Hashem, and those things perhaps will be less sensitive. In other words, we require much greater degradation, much greater disrespect for them to not allow a person to use them to serve Hashem. Rabbi Kotler gives another example. He says, Chazal tell us that if a person studies Torah, and it doesn't have any positive, practical impact on his life, he doesn't apply it to his daily life, and then the Chazal call that is the Vaz of the Torah. The Vaz of the Torah, is supposed to leave an impression on a person. Torah is supposed to affect how a person leads his life. A person studies Torah, and it doesn't change the way he leads his life. That's being the Vaz of the Torah. That's the degrading the Torah. So therefore, if a person learns the Torah, and it doesn't have an effect on him, it doesn't change his life, so then the Torah will no longer cooperate and will no longer have the proper impression. Right? The Torah is supposed to have an impression on a person. Hashem created the Torah in such a way that learning the Torah makes an impression on a person. But if a person doesn't take that impression and make it practical and change his life based on the impression that the Torah made on him, then the Torah will no longer make that impression upon the person and no longer be helpful to the person in the person's avodas Hashem. And therefore, Rav Aaron advises the person that we should make sure that whatever we learn, at least something, a small amount, even if we don't take the full lesson from it, even if we're not able to take the full impression that the Torah makes on us and apply it to our daily lives, but at least something. When we learn something in the Torah and it applies to our life, to try to actually practically make a difference in our life, to adapt our lives in some slight way, so that the Torah should at least make an impression on us so that we won't be considered degrading the Torah, the Torah will continue make an impression on us. Coming back to David HaMelech on his level, David HaMelech, says Rav Dessler, he should have looked to find a different way in the situation that he was in, try to find a different way besides, without cutting off the piece of the garment, without degrading Shaul's garment, David HaMelech on his level should have tried to find a different way to bring about what he was trying to accomplish. He wanted to be able to show Shaul that he was there and he could have killed him, but he didn't. Rav Dessler says that David HaMelech on his level should have tried to find a different way around it. He should have had more appreciation, more value for the garment of Shaul, for the tools that Hashem gave us to be able to serve him, for the clothing. And because he didn't, David HaMelech on his level was considered to be degrading and disgracing the garment, and therefore it came later on in life. David HaMelech in his old age, he was not able to benefit and from the warmth that clothing usually provides.
So if I did that, it would be okay, because right. I'm not on his level.
Right, that's what it seems like. You know, there's David HaMelech in his situation, right? So in the situation that David HaMelech was in, so normally for someone, we say, okay, yeah, you have all the reason in the world to do that. But David HaMelech on his level, there was an expectation that he should find a different way to do it without doing that. David HaMelech should have understood that that's disgraceful and degrading the garment.
Thank you.
But you can't figure out how else David HaMelech could have done it?
I don't know of any alternative.
Okay. Were you there?
I was not there.
Oh, okay. I might...
I wasn't in Gedi.
What?
I was at Engedi.
With David HaMelech? Maybe you were one of the Anoshov that was there in the back of the cave with him?
I hear what you are saying, and I am saying, what was his alternative? Because I cannot think of any.
But I don't think the fact that we can't think of an alternative is necessarily... disproves the fact that there was an alternative.
What did the advisors recommend?
The advisors recommended that he kill Shaul.
Uh-huh.
And that we're not saying that he should have killed Shaul, but
could he have captured him?
Could he have captured him?
I mean, he had all these men in the cave, and the other guys are not with him. They were like, could they?
I don't know what the options were.
So I hear the criticism. One of the things I learned is if you don't have a positive solution, you can say he should have done something else. And I can't think of any.
What's clear is that there had to have been some criticism of David for what he did, right? Why is it? Why is it that he had to suffer at the end of his life? Right? So there must have been some complaints, right? Something wrong with it, right? If there's something wrong with it, then there has to be there was an open solution. But otherwise,
I'm hearing you, but I.
Yeah, but what? It was one thing if you were there and you telling me that you saw there was no other solution and said maybe there's what to talk about. But why are you so convinced there was no other solution?
Well, I wasn't there, but neither was the person who criticized him there. I'm saying when you criticize somebody for their behavior, it seems to me something a rabbi once. It's okay to be a sophomore, but sophomores shouldn't pontificate. I didn't want to go there because it seems like I'm being disrespectful to this. But I'm asking, since I don't see any possible. Moish, maybe you can help.
You know, when you first of all, I think it was Shmuel who told Shaul that he would not descend to the kingship. I think it was, wasn't it Shmuel who told him
that what?
Wasn't it the Novi who told Saul that you would not descend to the kingship?
What do you mean? He would not
that continue? Hashem has chosen someone else.
Well, he wouldn't continue.
He wouldn't continue.
Okay.
So here he has the word of Hashem, and for whatever reason Hashem is, God doesn't have to explain, whatever reason. So he's got this craziness to kill him. The only way to deal with someone who's out to kill you and who pursues you is to kill him. Otherwise, there's never any relief. Now, in this case, Shaul kills himself because of a different situation.
Okay.
But, you know, human experience teaches us that you can't run forever.
Okay, I mean, one important concept that we have to understand is that our entire understanding of what these great people in Tanakh did is only based on what Chazal tell us, what we find in the Gemara and the Midrashim. That is the only way we can possibly understand. If we try to understand it on our own, we're doomed to fail. It's inevitable that we're not going to understand it. So we have to understand it based on what Chazal tell us. So Chazal tell us that what David did, when he killed Shaul, he didn't kill Shaul. So that was the proper thing to do. Do we necessarily understand it? Do we think we would have made the same decision? Perhaps you think you would have made the same decision, but our perspective on them, these people who are so much greater than us, and their understanding of the world, their understanding of the Torah is so much greater than our understanding, that we can't think of what they did in terms of what makes sense to us. We can only think of what they did in terms of what Chazal tell us. And that's an important concept when we approach the Navi. The Torah also, the Torah and the Levim, the Torah we're more used to it, that we approach it through Chazal, because with the Rashi's and everything, with the Midrashim we're familiar with, but in the Navi as well, right, the only way we can approach the Nevi'im and try to understand David HaMelech, the only way we could try to understand them is only through the words of Chazal, to try to read the words of the Navi and try to think on our own whether it makes sense to us and how it works out. It doesn't work. It's not the proper approach. We have to go based on what Chazal tell us. Chazal tell us based on their understanding, based on their Mesirah, on their tradition. What David did is not killing Shaul was proper, and cutting off the piece of his garment was improper, and that's how we have to accept it. If Chazal seemed to have understood it was another option, okay. So that's what Chazal tell us, and that's what we have to accept. Let's continue. So we'll further along in the Haftarah. Let's move to number 4. He's dialed on the source sheet. After the Navi finished discussing how they looked for a narrow besula, for a young maiden girl, for David HaMelech to keep him warm, they found one. The Pasuk now says, "Va'adoniyo ben Chagis misnasei leimoir ani emloy." Adoniyo, the son of Chagis. Right. Chagis was one of the wives of David HaMelech. Adoniyo was the son of David HaMelech from his wife Chagis. So Misnaseh exalted himself and he said, "Ani emloch." He said to himself, "Oh," he saw David HaMelech was old and frail. So he saw this as an opportunity to grab the throne. He figured David HaMelech is sick and weak. This is my opportunity to become the next king. Vayaslo Yerechev uforoshim, made himself chariots and horsemen. V'chamishim ish rotzim lefonov, and 50 men running in front of him. He said, "What's the best way to seamlessly move into the position of king?" He says, "I'm going to act like the king." So he got himself horsemen, chariots, people running in front of him, and he acted like the king. Now, happens to be that Adoniyo was the oldest living son of David. So he wasn't completely crazy for thinking he should be the next king. However, as we'll see later on, Hashem had previously promised David that Shlomo would be the next king. So this wasn't going to happen. Pasuk Vav continues, "V'le'atzovoy oviv miyomov." His father had never angered him, leimor, to say, "Madu akocha osisa," why have you done this? "V'gamhu toiv toyar me'oid," and also he was very good looking. "V'oiso yoldo acharei Avshalom," and she gave birth to after Avshalom. So the pasuk tells us a number of different facts about Adoniyo. First of all, his father had never angered him, saying, "Why have you done this?" Number two, that he was good looking. And third, that she gave birth to after Avshalom. What is the Navi trying to tell us? So a number of Mefarshim understand that the Navi is trying to explain to us why Adoniyo thought he should be the next king. And the Rabbi explains to us that, first of all, his father had never criticized him, telling him, "Why have you done that?" So Adoniyo thought he was a great guy. He thought he was very fit to be the next king. Second of all, he said to himself, "Oh, he's very good looking, he's very popular, It's another reason why he should be the next king. And third of all, Vayisi Yolda Acharei Avshalom, and she, meaning his, presumably it means his mother Chagis, she gave birth to after Avshalom. He was the oldest, and therefore that's another reason why he should be the king. The Malbim understands slightly differently. The Malbim understands the pasuk is coming to tell us why he wasn't scared of repercussions of trying to take the throne when he wasn't really supposed to. So first of all, his father's being scared of his father, what his father would do to him, that he wasn't worried about. His father never criticized him, so he wasn't worried, he wasn't scared that his father would get upset at him, his father would punish him for doing this. And as far as the rest of the nation, he thought that they'd be willing to accept him. First of all, he was good-looking, he was popular, and he had been born after Avshalom, he was the oldest, and therefore there would be no reason why the nation, why the Jewish people should reject him.
Does that mean he's not the oldest? Avshalom's the oldest?
Well, Avshalom was already killed.
He was living. Right. Okay.
One technical note, it seems to say that she gave birth to Mech after Avshalom, which sounds like that Adoniyah and Avshalom were brothers from the mother, which is not true. So a number of the Mepharshim said what it means is that his mother raised him in a similar way to that Avshalom was raised. We know that Avshalom had rebelled against David previously. So Avshalom obviously was not such a fine fellow. So the Navi tells us that Vayisa Yolda Acharei Avshalom, the reason why Adoniyah did this, why he tried to take the throne when he wasn't really meant to, was because Vayisa Yolda Acharei Avshalom, his mother raised him in a similar way that Avshalom was raised. The same way Avshalom, obviously there was something wrong with the way he was raised, which is why he turned out the way he turned out. So too, Adoniyah, Oysa Yolda Acharei Avshalom, his mother did not gave birth to, but raised him in the, after the same in the same battle that Avshalom was raised. So going back to the first fact in the pasuk, Lo'atzavay Oviv Miyomov Leimor Badu Akocha Asisa. His father never angered him, his father never criticized him, saying, why did you do this? And the question is, what does that mean? David HaMelech never disciplined his son. He never rebuked him. First of all, we know the mitzvah to rebuke any person. You should rebuke your friend. He's supposed to give rebuke. And second of all, he's his parent. The job of the parent is to direct the child. This is a difficult question. And this Rashi, in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, it's number 5, Oishei, on the source sheet, Rashi, there quotes the Sifri. In the beginning of Sefer Devarim, Chazal tell us that Moshe was rebuking, was criticizing the Jewish people for all the things that they had done improperly throughout the time that they were in the Midbar. In the Pasuk, it's not clear, it's only alluded to in the Pasuk. But Chazal tell us that Moshe was actually rebuking the Jewish people. So, in the Pasuk, we see that this rebuke of Moshe Rabbeinu was taking place right before his passing, right before he passed away. Rashi there brings to the Sifri tells us that Moshe intentionally only rebuked the people shortly before his death. And he says he learned that from Yaakov Avinu. The Yaakov also only rebuked his children, Reuven, and the others, shortly before his death. If you look at the fourth line from the bottom, and the last two words on the line, Rashi quotes the Sifri says, "V'pnei arba devarim ein moichichin es ha'odom el samuch lamisa." There's four reasons why a person should not rebuke someone else until it's close to the time of his death. One reason is if he's going to rebuke him earlier on, we're concerned that perhaps he'll rebuke him and then on a later time he'll rebuke him again. It's going to be too much rebuke. Second of all, if he rebukes his friend, then it's earlier on in his life, then we're concerned that later on they'll meet and the one who is being rebuked will be embarrassed when he sees the person who rebuked him. That's another concern, and the Sifri goes on to to give another two reasons. But the common denominator between all the reasons that Sifri gives is that there's a serious concern that when someone rebukes his friend, that the one who's being rebuked will be offended, will become defensive, and that'll cause a rift in the relationship between the two people. Right? If you look earlier on in the Rashi, Rashi says that Yaakov Avinu was concerned that if he would rebuke Reuven when it wasn't close to the time of his death, then Reuven might reject Yaakov and say, okay, forget about it, I'm going to go join Esau. Life's much, much better there. He won't criticize me. So there's a concern that when someone gives rebuke to his friend, to his child, then they'll damage the relationship between the two people, and therefore only when it's the end of his life, that's an appropriate time to give rebuke. So there are those who suggest that was the reason why David had not rebuked Adoniah either. David didn't rebuke Adoniah, he wouldn't rebuke him until it was coming close to the time of his death. So previously, David had not rebuked him. He didn't want to, so to speak, turn Adoniah off. Didn't want to ruin the relationship between them. And therefore, David had not rebuked him and not criticized him earlier on. But the question remains, how does that fit with the mitzvah of Teichacha? Very nice, and Sifri tells me that it's not so practical, it's not a good idea to give rebuke before a person reaches the end of his life. But what about the mitzvah of Teichacha? So the Chidah and others say that the mitzvah of Teichacha applies to stopping a person who is going to sin, a person who's going to do an Aveira. If a person senses that someone who he knows, a friend, a child, a spouse, a colleague, is going to sin, then the mitzvah of Teichacha is to rebuke him to make sure that he does not go and do the sin. But that only applies to things that are in the future, things that can happen, that might happen. However, when it comes to past sins, past aveiros, that's where the Sifri tells us, don't tell people off for what they did in the past. Don't rebuke them for what they did in the past, except at the end of your life. Right now, it's not relevant for right now. The person's not in the process of sinning. So therefore, don't talk about previous sins. Don't talk about things that are already history. It's not a good idea, and has a tendency to ruin relationships. So therefore, there's two different ideas. There's the idea of making sure that someone doesn't go ahead and do a sin. If a person is in the process of doing a sin, he's about to do a sin, he plans to do it. So then there's mitzvah hechiach techiach, immediately on the spot, a person has to rebuke them and tell them not to do the sin. However, a person has to keep in mind always that when it comes to history, to previous things, let history remain history, and until the end of a person's life, a person shouldn't take a chance of ruining a relationship by rebuking, by giving mussar and teichacha about something that someone did in the past. So, certainly, David HaMelech, we saw Adoniah was going to do something wrong. He sensed that he was planning to do something wrong. Certainly, David gave him teichacha, as the Torah requires. However, when it came to Madua Kocha Asiso, like the Pasuk says, why have you done that in the past? That David HaMelech did not criticize Adoniah. He was waiting until it came closer to the end of his life. And because of that, Adoniah thought that David HaMelech approved of his actions. David didn't tell him off. So Adoniah made the mistake, the fatal mistake, of thinking that David approved of everything he did, and therefore he thought he was fit to be king. He thought David HaMelech would encourage him to be king, because he thought that he was acting appropriately and everything he did was alright. It's an important idea to keep in mind. Not to say that we should completely refrain from ever talking to someone about something that they did that was improper. I definitely, especially when it comes to children, people who are responsible to inform them of what's right and what's wrong. So certainly we have to make sure that they know if they have done things wrong. But it has to be with a tremendous amount of attention paid to do it, to make sure to do it with love and with caring, to make sure it's done gently in such a way that it shouldn't ruin any of our relationships.
But you, without rebuking anybody, Hashem has already told David HaMelech that Shlomo was going to follow him into the kingship. So why did he gather all of his sons and say to his sons, Hashem has spoken to me and Shlomo is the next king. If you do anything to hurt him, to try to hurt him, to try to prevent this, you are going against the word of Hashem and his commandment, and you will suffer greatly. So give them a chance to not sin by informing them that Hashem has already made the choice. You can't challenge that.
Okay. It's a good question. Perhaps, I mean, a number of things. Perhaps David HaMelech never crossed his mind that one of his sons would actually try to override Hashem's decision that Shlomo should take over from David. Perhaps the thought never entered his mind. Perhaps he thought he still had time, and he thought that he would get to that later on. It's actually not so clear to me whether this was something that was well known, that Hashem said that Shlomo HaMelech would be the next king. Because it is a little troubling that Adoniyah thought that he could do it. It was the Navi told up, it was a Nevuah. That Hashem told David that Shlomo would take him over. So it's a little troubling that Adoniyah thought that he could somehow override that. Now, the only one who I saw actually address that, I think it was the Radak. And the Radak seems to acknowledge the fact that, you know, how can Adoniyah think that he'll get past this Nevuah, this prophecy of Hashem? And he seems to say something along the lines of the fact that he thought, you know, he'll give it a chance. You know, let's give it a shot and see, maybe it'll work. But it is a little troubling. It's something that did bother me, is what was that, you know, what is Adoniyah thinking? That he thought that because, well, I'm a good guy, so I should be the next king. Very nice, you know, you could be a good guy from today to tomorrow. I'm sure there were a lot of tzaddikim, and there was Nevi'im, and tzaddikim, and Kohen Gadol, lots of great people, but they weren't chosen to be the king. It was David HaMelech, and then Shlomo after him. So it is a little troubling why Adoniyah thought that he could possibly be the next king. As far as why David didn't say anything, perhaps he thought that it was obvious to everyone, once there was a Nevuah, that Shlomo was going to be the next thing. The thought never crossed his mind that anyone would try to override that. But it's a good question. Chaim Kanievsky, in a Sefer Time of the Kro, writes something slightly different, about this idea of Le'atzovayov of Miyomov, that his father never criticized him. And Chaim Kanievsky writes that indeed there was nothing to criticize. Adoniyah was a good child, he was a good bacher, he learned nicely in yeshiva. He was doing quite well. There was nothing to David to rebuke him about. So what went wrong? What went wrong? So there's an interesting Gemara in Maseches Makos, which I don't think I put on here. No. The Gemara in Maseches Makos says, very interesting thing, it's talking about a father who kills his son when he's hitting him to discipline him. And the Gemara says that even if the child is learning well, still a father is supposed to hit his child. Now, I'm not getting into whether in today's day and age parents should hit their children or not. That's not my issue. I'm not interested in discussing that. But the Gemara says that even if the child's learning well, the father should still hit him. So Chaim Kanievsky says, that David HaMelech as well, despite the fact that Adoniyah was good, he was acting properly, David HaMelech for sure was proud of him. Despite that, David HaMelech should have maybe not hit him, but at least to find some area to criticize him, find some area where he could tell him to improve, tell him that he could do better. Why? Chaim Kanievsky explains that the child needs to be accustomed to hearing criticism. The child, he can't become too complacent and come to let his ego get too big that he thinks he's so great. So even if he's doing well, we wouldn't really necessarily expect more of him, But it's important that we should find some area to criticize him, so we should realize that he's not perfect. He should be used to hearing criticism. If he hears criticism later on in life, it shouldn't destroy him. It's important that he realize that he's not perfect. He shouldn't get used to thinking that he's perfect and never be able to see any wrong in himself. And the problem was that David HaMelech didn't, so to speak, preventative discipline. He didn't find a place to discipline him so that the Adon Yoel should get used to being disciplined. He should get used to the idea that he does have imperfections, that sometimes he does things wrong, and then he needs to improve them. And because of that, when it came to this point, Adon Yoel thought that he was invincible, that he could do no wrong, and therefore he went ahead with his rebellion, really, against David and Shlomo. I saw another svarim, a slightly different explanation of the Gemara. The Gemara says to hit the child, even if he's learning well. So others say that the idea is that the child shouldn't become complacent. He does what he does, and he's happy with what he does. If he's doing well, he should try to push himself out of his comfort zone to go farther, to excel further. Shouldn't be happy with whatever he's doing. If he's doing well, that's a great thing. So he should be acknowledged, should be praised. But he should also be encouraged. He should also be pushed to try to go further, to try to go higher and higher and accomplish more and more things. Things that he might not have thought that he could accomplish. Things that he's not necessarily expected to accomplish. He should try to do them anyway. Try to rise up and go above what's expected on him, what's expected of him, and try to do more. Complacency is one of the worst things, especially for a Jew who's trying to serve Hashem. So a person can't be complacent. The rule generally is that if we're not growing, if we're not going up, then usually we're going down. A person is complacent. He says, "Okay, I'm doing my thing. I'm doing a pretty good job. I have my davening time, my learning time. I'm doing my thing. So I'll keep on doing that." Then usually he'll end up going down. Person has to try, constantly trying to go higher and higher. And that was the problem. Although Adon Yoel was doing well, the David HaMelech should have pushed him to try to accomplish more, try to go above and beyond, try to do better and better and better. And Vayatzovi Ov and Biyomov, David did not push him farther, and that's what led to Adon Yoel's downfall. Moving on in the Haftarah, number 6, Yisvav, on the source sheet. Adon Yoel gathered together some of the leaders, the prominent people amongst the Jewish people, to support him and to advise him. And Pasuk Tes says, Vayizbach Adon Yoel tzoinu vokor umiri. Adon Yoel made this gathering, and he slaughtered sheep, and bokor, cattle, umiri, and fattened cows. Im Evan Hazoy Cheles Asher Eitzel Ein Roigel. Where did this take place? It took place by the stone Evan Hazoy Cheles. It's the fact that either because it was near Ein Roigel, it was near this spring, so it was near the flowing water. Another explanation is Evan Hazoy Cheles. There was this big stone that all the teenagers who thought they were so strong, they would all try to push this stone. At Zoy Cheles, the word comes from Zoy Cheles, means to flow, from the moving, flowing stone. So this was a stone where they all get together and see who could push it the farthest, who could push it with one hand, who could push it with his feet. So everyone, there was competitions to see who could push the stone. So it's called Evan HaZecheles. That's where this is taking place. Adon Yoel is making this party, slaughtering sheep and cattle and fattened oxen. Im Evan HaZecheles Asher Eitzel Ein Roigel, next to this flowing stone, which was near the place called Ein Roigel, which was a spring. And he called, invited all his brothers, the children of the king, those who were on his side, and to all the people from Shevet Yehuda, the tribe of Yehuda, who were the servants of the king, also the ones who were on his side, and he gathered them all together. And the Gemara Masech Sanhedrin has a very interesting limbud. It learns something very interesting from this pasuk, something which is really does not have very much to do with this specific pasuk at all, but the Gemara learns the after this pasuk. Let's look at number 7, Zion on the source sheet. Rabbi Yossi says, "Kol acholik al malchus beis David, anyone who disputes the kingship, the kingdom of the family, the dynasty of David, roi la'achishay nochosh, he's deserving to be bitten by a snake." deserving to be bitten by a snake. How do we know that he's deserving to be bitten by a snake? Ksiv hocha, it says over here, our pasuk vayizbech adon Yahu tzoin uvakar umiri. Im evan hazoi cheles, adon Yahu slaughtered the sheep and the cattle and the fattened cows. Im evan hazoi cheles, it tells us that it took place by this stone of zoi cheles. Ksiv hasam, it says over there, in Parshas Hazinu, im chamas zoi chalai ofar. With the venom of those who slither in the dirt. Right? So the venom of snakes would slither in the dirt. Snakes are referred to as zoichalei ofar, they slither in the dirt. So the Gemara makes a drasha, Rabbi Yossi says, that just as it says by Adon Yahu, who was rebelling against David, against Shlomo, it says that it was by Evan HaZoicheles. The Navi made sure to point out to us, to tell us that it was by Evan HaZoicheles, he calls it the name Evan HaZoicheles. So that is a reference to what it says in Parashas Hazinu. It refers to the snakes, to the venom of snakes, as the venom of the Zoichalei Ofar. So it says, by Adon Yahu, but it was by the Evan HaZoicheles. And we find that the snakes are referred to in Chamas as Zoichalei Ofar. So the Gemara says, that we learn from there, that just like Adon Yahu was rebelling against the kingdom of David, and it says Evan HaZoicheles, and that's a reference to the fact that he was deserving to be bitten by a snake, so too anyone else who disputes the kingdom of David is deserving to be bitten by a snake. It's an important rule to know. Shouldn't try to rise up and rebel against the kingdom of David. But the truth is, it's a very strange Gemara. The reason why it's a strange Gemara is because it's hard to understand how we could consider Adoniah Choylek al Malchus Beis David. Gemara is telling us that Adonio was considered a Choylek al Malchus Beis David. He was disputing the kingdom of the family of David. The question you have to ask is, which family did Adonio come from?
David.
David. So how can we call Adonio a Choylek al Malchus Beis David? Someone who's disputing, who's rebelling against the kingdom of David. He himself is of the kingdom of David. So I understand that he wasn't supposed to be the king. But to consider him a Chelek HaMalchus Beis David, why is he considered a Chelek HaMalchus Beis David? So the answer seems to be, based on what the Rambam writes, the Rambam has a lengthy introduction to Perek Chelek, in our Gemara, it's the last Perek of Masechta Sanhedrin. So the Rambam has a lengthy introduction, and there is where the Rambam writes his famous 13 principles, the Yud Gimel Ikrim, the 13 principles of the Jewish faith. And the 12th of the 13 principles is that we have to believe that the Mashiach will come and that the world will reach its state of perfection the way it's supposed to be, so on and so forth. And at the end of that Yisoid, at the end of that Iker, the Rambam writes what we have in footnote number 8, Ois Ches. It says, Mechlal Yisoid Zeh, and included in this fundamental principle is She'ein melech liYisrael, that there can be no king for the Jewish people, elo mi beis David, only from the family of David, umizera shloimoy, and from the progeny of shloimoy, bilvad. Only, that's the only. A king can only be, a king of the Jewish people, can only be from the family of David, through shloimoy. V'chol ha'cholek ha'mishpocha ha'azois, anyone who argues, who disputes this family, kofar v'hashem yisbarach v'neviyo, he is denied Hashem and his prophets. He's contradicting Hashem and his prophets, who tell us that the kings of the Jewish people have to be only from the family of David, and specifically from the progeny of Shlomo. So presumably, when the Gemara tells us Kolachilik Amalchus Beis David, anyone who disputes, who argues against the kingdom of the family of David is more, means more than just someone who's progeny of David. Included in Malchus Beis David means David through Shlomo. And the kingdom of David is specifically through Shlomo. So we say that Adon Yahu was Chelek al Malchus Beis David. What that means is that he disputed the fact that the kingdom of David is specifically through Shlomo. The Rambam is telling us that when we talk about Malchus Beis David doesn't mean children of David, the family of David, it means the family of David specifically through Shlomo. What's the source for that? So the source that is brought for that is on our source sheet in number 9, Oistas, Pasukim Divrei Ayomim. David HaMelech is talking in the Pasukim Divrei Ayomim. David HaMelech says, Vayivchar Hashem Elikei Yisrael bi mikol beis avi. Hashem, the God of the Jewish people, chose me from my entire family, from the entire household of my father, li Yisrael Melech al Yisrael, to be a king amongst the Jewish people, le'olam, forever. And he goes back and he traces it back. He says, Kivi Yehuda bochar lenogit. Because amongst Hashem chose Yehuda, the Sheva, the tribe of Yehuda, to be the prince. Uvibes Yehuda beis avi. And Hashem narrowed it down from within the Sheva of Yehuda. Hashem narrowed it down to beis avi, to my father's family. Uvibnei avi bi rotzo lehamlech al kol Yisrael. And from my father's family, Hashem desired me. Me, David HaMelech, to be the king over the Jewish people. Umikol bonai, from amongst all my children, ki rabim bonem nosam li Hashem. Hashem gave me a lot of children. Vayivchar b'shloimo yvini lo sheves al kisei malchus Hashem al Yisrael. Hashem chose Shloimo, my son, to sit on the throne of the kingdom of Hashem on the Jewish people. So David makes it clear that as he goes down the line of all the designations that Hashem chose, who Hashem chose to be the king, that Hashem chose the Shevet Yehuda. And from the Shevet of Yehuda, the family of Yishai, Hashem chose. And from within the family of Yishai, specifically David. And David says, and from my children, Hashem chose specifically Shlomo. So we see in the designations that Hashem made, who should be the king over the Jewish people, we see from there that there was a Bechira. Hashem chose that it should be specifically Shlomo. It's not that Hashem chose that there's a Malchus based David, the dynasty of David, and it happens to be that the one who was chosen was Shlomo. There's a specific designation that the kingdom of David, the dynasty of David, is specifically continued through Shlomo and through Shlomo only. That is the definition of Malchus based David is the definition of the dynasty of David is that through Shlomo HaMelech and the progeny of Shlomo, that's how the kingdom, the dynasty of David continues. And besides the fact that this explains the Gemara, but now we know that it's part of our fundamental beliefs. As believing Jews, this is something we need to know. The Rambam tells us that this is one of the things that we have to know as Jews, is not only that Hashem chose David and his family to be the kings over the Jewish people, but we have to know that it's specifically through Shlomo and through no other sons of David. I'd like to continue, but I think we'll stop here.
Oh, why?
Well, you want to continue? It's already up to 57 minutes and 45 seconds. Right?
Well, yeah, but we only have one more page to do.
We have one more page.
I'll
take a vote. Anyone not want to continue? Okay, I guess we'll go a little further.
Bring conclusion. I started it. It's nice to finish what you have here.
Fine, no problem. I'm ready to go. Okay, so we'll go a little further. So Nosan HaNovi, Nosan was the designated Novi of David HaMelech. So Nosan sees what's happening with Adonio who's trying to take over the kingdom. And Nosan knows, Nosan himself had prophesied that Shlomo would be the one to take over David. So Nosan is concerned. So what does he do? Let's look at number 10, Oisiyon on the source sheet. So Nosan approaches Bathsheba, who was the mother of Shlomo. She says, "Haloi shomat kimbolach Adoniyahu ben Chagis v'Adoninu David lo yodo." Have you not heard that Adoniyahu, the son of Chagis, has taken over or attempted to take over the kingdom, and our master David doesn't know about it; he's unaware. V'atoyim now l'chi go. I'm going to give you advice. So you can say this nafsheich, your soul and the soul of your son Shlomo. So I'm going to give you some advice to save yourself and to save Shlomo. What's the advice? L'chi go uvoi yel hamelech David and come to King David. The Amar Teilovin should say to him, Haloi ato adoni hamelech nishbato la'amoscho leimor. Did you not, my master, the king, swear to your maidservant saying, that Shlomo, your son, He will rule after me, and he will sit on my throne. David, did you not make such a promise? Did you not take such an oath to me? So, David, what's going on? You told me my son Shlomo is going to be the king. So what's going on over here? Why are you allowing Adonio to be the king? And says the plan is going to be, while you're speaking there with the king, I'm going to come after you. I'll give all the details to Dovid HaMelech. I'll continue, I'll speak to him about it. So you go first. You bring it to Dovid HaMelech's attention, because it's relevant. It's most relevant to you. He made that promise, he made that oath to you, that Shlomo would take over. So you go, and I'll come afterwards. I'll fill in all the details. I'll speak to Dovid, the king, about it. And we'll make sure that Adon Yahu is not that Adon Yahu's rebellion is put down. And the question that a number of Mefarshim ask is that why did Nosson have to come up with this whole idea of going to David and you say this and I'll come and I'll say that? Nosson knows good and well that Hashem said, b'nevuah, there was a nevuah prophecy that Hashem said Hashem is going to be the next king. So we're supposed to believe that nevuah is true. And Hashem has his ways of taking care of business, of doing what he has to do. So why doesn't Nosson sit back, relax, and put his feet up with a lazy boy, and Hashem let him watch and then see what happens. Hashem will take care of it. He knows that there was a nevuah, there was a prophecy that Shlomo would be the king. So why is Nosson getting so nervous? Why is he so worried? Why does he have to go figure out strategies, how to convince David to put down Adonio's rebellion? If Hashem promised, Hashem will take care of it. Just sit back and relax and watch Hashem do what he has to do. So the simplest answer to this question is actually Rashi, which is usually a good place to look when you have a question on the simple understanding of the pasuk. And Rashi says that on the pasuk it says, I'll give you an idea how you can save yourself. Rashi says, from fighting, after the death of the king, your son Shlomo is going to want to become the king, like Hashem promised him. So Nosson said, listen, we're better off not having any fights here. If we're going to wait until David dies, this is going to end up being a whole fight. Shlomo is going to say, I'm supposed to be the king. Adonai said, I was going to say, I already am the king. It's going to be a whole fight and back and forth. There's going to be all sorts of problems. So listen, save yourself the aggravation. Go to David HaMelech now while he's still alive. Let David himself make it clear he's supposed to be the next king, right? Like Mr. Sternberg said before, let David HaMelech make it clear, and then you'll save yourself from fights and arguments after David HaMelech dies. Once David HaMelech makes it clear he's supposed to be the next king, then everything will be fine. So that's the simple pshat from Rashi. And Rashi says it was not an issue of whether Shlomo would be the king or not. It was just an issue of avoiding fights and avoiding aggravation, avoiding arguments. Let's go to David HaMelech now. Let him make it clear, and then everything will be straightforward. The Ababinel, however, says something very interesting. And it's really an idea that perhaps we'll go back to at a different time that requires a lot of discussion. He says, the words that he says are, Shayyudim ho'elokiyim heim al tanai. K'moshin espor, b'zulah ze'amokim. He says that Hashem's promises, so to speak, it's probably not good to use the word promises, but when Hashem tells the Navi what's going to happen, they have a tnai. There's a condition. They're conditional, and therefore he says, "Lochein ha'yefshir shoya yirahu choizer." So it could be that which Hashem said that Shlomo would be the one to take over David, said it could have changed. L'chei David or Shlomo or Bashevad could be a number of different factors. If David, because of David's sin, or Shlomo perhaps sinned, or Basheva sinned. For any one of a number of reasons, Hashem could change his mind and go back from that good that he promised that Shlomo would be the next king. So Nosson, who had said the nevuah, he didn't want there to be any changes. He didn't want his nevuah to be later on to be canceled. So therefore, he wanted to push David to make sure that he got Shlomo into be the king, so that Hashem shouldn't reverse that which he had promised earlier. So Ababinel here seems to be of the opinion that despite the fact that Hashem said something in Nevuah, he gave a Nevuah to a Navi, he told him that something good is going to happen, it could be reversed. Hashem could change his mind and then it could not happen. He refers to to his commentary on Yoino. It seems to be right there, and not to get into it at great length, but there seems to be an example of where Hashem said something in Nevuah, and he changed his mind. Hashem gave a Nevuah to Yoino, and the Nevuah seems to say, look at the Pesukim Yoino, the Nevuah seems to say that Nineveh will be destroyed. That was what Yoino was supposed to go say. He says, Nineveh is being destroyed. It doesn't say Nineveh will be destroyed if you don't do tshuva. It says Nineveh is being destroyed. And yet, because it did tshuva, Hashem changed his mind. So that seems to be a prime example of where something was said by Nevuah, yet Hashem changed his mind, so to speak, and the Nevuah ended up not coming to fruition. And I believe that that's something that's agreed to by at least the majority of the Mefarshim, is that it's pretty clear that sometimes it's a Nevuah and things could change.
So this could be for him. I probably incorrectly thought that if a Navi says something positive, it will happen.
Okay. Right, so we're getting to that. So the Babinel pretty clearly does not agree with that. Right? Okay. However, that does seem to be the opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam writes, in Hilchos Yisrael HaTorah, and other places as well, that when a Navi prophesizes something that's good for someone, that Nevuah, the Nevuah that's for good, cannot be reversed. And Mr. Shem, some other time, we can get into the number of different places where this comes up, and it explains some Gemaras and some Pesukim very nicely. But the Rambam seems to disagree with this Ababinel. Ababinel seems to say that a Nevuah, even if it's a Nevuah that something good is going to happen, it could be reversed if a person sins, or for whatever reason Hashem decides to reverse it. However, the Rambam seems to be the opinion that only applies to a Nevuah that something bad is going to happen. Like in the case of Nineveh, when Nineveh was going to be destroyed, so there, the Nevuah could be reversed. However, not when the Nevuah was for something good.
Thank you.
A third answer to this question is in the Bienes and Eibschitz, in the Sefer Ahavas Yonason, brings a medrash which seems not to appear anywhere else, at least in the 45,000 svarim that I have access to. medrash does not seem to appear anywhere else, but he brings a medrash which says on the pasuk. On the pasuk it says, "Va'atolchi yotzeich no'etzah." I'll give you advice. Umalti es nafsheich ves nevesh b'neich shloimo. You should save your soul and the soul of your son Shloimo. The Medrash says, "Ves zechus b'neich." What does it mean that they should save? You'll save the soul of your son. You'll save the merit of your son. Maybe save the merit of your son Shloimo. So what does that mean? So Rabbi Yehuda Eibschitz explains that what it means is that, again, surely Nosan Anovi understood that if it was a Nevuah, if Hashem said that Shlomo was going to become the king, he would become the king. However, the more unnatural it is, the more zechusim it'll take to make Shlomo the king. At the end of the day, Shlomo is going to become the king. The question is, how much effort, so to speak, is Hashem going to have to put in to make that happen? So it says Nosan Anovi, and we know that Chazal tell us that when a person puts himself in a situation where he needs a nace, he needs a miracle to save him, then menachin lo yimizchu yosef, that they take away and subtract from his chosim, from his merits. If he needs a nace, so then you have to use up some of your credit. So therefore, Nosan Anovi said, we don't want Shloimeh to have to use up any of his credit. Right? Save the chosim of your son Shloimeh. If you leave things as they are, at the end of the day, everything is going to end well. Shloimeh will end up being the king, everything will be fine. But you see, Adon Yahu, he has all these prominent people on his side, he has a general on his side. It's not going to be simple unless we nip it in the bud, unless we stop it right away. It's not going to be simple to make Shlomo the king. And the more nisim, the more unnatural things that Hashem's going to have to come on to, so to speak, to make Shlomo the king, the more zechusim Shlomo is going to have to give up to become the king. So therefore, Nosson said, this is the way Jason Ibrish explains the Medrash, Nosson said to David HaMelech, and Nosson said to Bathsheba, listen, let's save Shlomo's chosim. Go to David now, have David put down Adon Yahu's rebellion, and this way we won't have to come on to any great unnatural events for Shlomo to become the king, and you'll save the merits of your son Shlomo.
Thank you.